Good morning, good afternoon, good evening from wherever you are in the world. Welcome to another episode of your favorite hockey podcast. It could even be your favorite podcast of all time. We'll happily take that, but we'll accept hockey for now, at least. It is episode 57. And looking at our most recent guests, we go back to 55. We had Heather McEwen, who was looking to play for Scotland. An episode later, episode 56, we had Jess Lardens, who was happy to represent South Africa, but was talking about possibly playing overseas, Belgium perhaps, a few other places. We really have covered the length and breadth of the planet, but we're doing so again once more, and this time literally we're going to the other side of the world. But I'm not going to spoil it, because alongside me once again from a fairly noisier a spot, although a really, really great spot, very, very kind to us, the Grind Coffee Shop over at Melrose Arch, I've got my usual partner in crime, Tyron Jabu Barnard. How are you doing, Ty?
Yeah, good day, mate. Welcome to the Barbie that is Hockey the Podcast. This is for all our Australian listeners. Just to get you. No, okay, I'm going to stop. But yeah, Derek, welcome. As you say, I'm sitting at the Grind Coffee Shop in Melrose Arch. I had a meeting this morning and I wasn't going to have time to get home. So I just phoned them and said, can I come sit here? And apologies if it's a bit noisy in the background, but that noisiness is happiness because it means people are out and about working, making money. Lockdown is lessened, but don't worry, I am a good social distance from anybody. And when I'm not talking, I have a mask on. So, it's a fantastic morning. It's a great day to talk about hockey. But then again, isn't every day a great day to talk about hockey? And as given away by the accent and by Derek's introduction, we're going down under today with somebody whose family represents all different sports, different countries around the world. The South African living in Australia and whose brother plays cricket for England. I mean, you need to take your notebook out this morning to keep up with it. But we have the incredible South African international hockey player, Lene Milan.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. It's an absolute honor. But I just would like to say, Ty, that was an awful accent. I think you should try a little bit harder next time.
Yeah, no, look, in fairness, I usually have a problem in whatever accent I try and go with. I usually end up in Russian, and that's just not appropriate. So I'll keep my South African twang, and you can keep your little Aussie accent to yourself.
I don't have an Aussie accent. It's slight. It's getting there.
I mean, Lene, just for the benefit of everybody who is listening, where in the world do we find you right now and why in the world do we find you there?
Well, I am currently in Perth in Australia, as that accent obviously describes. I'm here at the moment because, I came over a few years ago to obviously see Australia and play a little bit of hockey abroad. And when I was here, I absolutely fell in love with it. Love it here. Obviously very similar to South Africa. So, just obviously brought me back each year. And now, obviously, with the COVID stuff, not that you can travel anywhere. I'm permanently based here at the moment.
So, permanently based purely because of COVID, or was that just a happy accident? Are you happy to describe yourself as an Australian for now? But, I mean, I don't mean physically, obviously, I just mean where you're based.
Yes, definitely not an Australian. I'm still really proudly South African, but permanently actually out of choice at the moment. So I've just recently received my permanent residency. So I actually applied for that last year. So I waited for about a year for it. So before the whole COVID stuff hits obviously everywhere, I'd already made that decision to apply for my permanent residency here. So yes, it is home now.
And tell me, Lene, I mean, we've got to ask. So you say you won't describe yourself as an Australian, but you are based there. You're very much South African through and through, heart and head, et cetera, et cetera. In terms of international representation, could we see a Milan listed in an Australian lineup in the near future?
Well, you never know, but probably not. I think I'd be a bit too old by that time. I don't think time is on my side anymore, so probably not, but you never know.
Because, I mean, it's an interesting thing. Of course, we mentioned the Sporting family, and for those that don't know, just revealing as to just how Sporting they are in terms of the family that that you come from, in terms of siblings and parents, etc.
Yes, so my dad is actually a good cricketer himself when he was obviously a little bit younger, which obviously translated to my brothers. So both brothers obviously got into cricket at a young age. My middle brother, Charles, he actually came over to Melbourne in Australia to come play some cricket, but decided to follow his career as an engineer. And then my eldest brother, Darby, he is currently playing for England. So we were all born in the UK, so we all have those British passports, which obviously made him eligible to play for England. So grew up in a big sporting family, which is probably why I also took on the sport as well. My mum was a good water skier, so not as much wall sports, but yeah, very big sporting family.
It's always interested me, the connection with the Milans and the UK, because ordinarily in the past we've always seen a case of where anyone that's got South African roots that's gone on to play for England, it's been a case of they were born here and then either educated in England or they've got there via their grandparents or parents, etc. We've seen like the likes of Kevin Peterson and many, many others. But it's different for you guys and ladies, because of course, as mentioned, you're born there, yet grew up in South Africa, which is pretty cool. I mean, we like to claim it.
Of course, yes. Yeah. So I actually think, specifically, I would still probably classify as born and bred in South Africa, because we moved over when I was 3 years old, Charles was 5 and Darby 7. So we obviously grew up in South Africa. That was where majority of our sporting career obviously happened. So you guys can definitely claim that, there's no doubt. But Darby, for example, he would have probably spent majority of his life in the UK, to be honest, because he moved over when he was 7 to all the family. We moved together when he was 7, but then moved back to the UK, obviously, to follow his cricket career at age 18. So, and he's, I think, 33 now, and we need to think about that. So majority of his life has actually been in the UK, to be honest.
Well, and of course, the last thing we'll talk about your brother is obviously he's not just a good cricketer, he's currently the top-ranked T20 batsman in the world. So that's a pretty proud feather in the cap for the Milans.
It's absolutely incredible. We obviously follow his career really closely, as we should, but we obviously support him so much and we are so incredibly proud of him. I mean, a role model to all of us as well, as a family. And a lot of us, like when he was playing in the Ashes and stuff, we followed him around the world. So I'm really, really proud of him. And it's a huge achievement that probably 90% of people will never be able to say they have achieved in their life. So not to brag about my brother, but well done to him. I'm really proud of him.
Well, and obviously we want to now brag about you. So, I mean, Linnea, obviously we talk about international, and it's a pleasure. You yourself have maybe a disappointing for some, as you only have 17 caps for the national outdoor team, or 17 recorded caps. There might be one or two that aren't. But you made a debut in you played in the Under-21 World Cup in Germany in Mönchengladbach. And, I mean, I was looking at the squad last night that you played alongside. So Pumi Mbanda, Izal Latakhan, Tanya Brits, Taryn Mallett, Tiffany Jones, Lillian Duplessis, I mean, current national captain Aaron Hunter, Nicole Walraven, Renai Erasmus. I mean, is it a little bit frustrating for you when you look at the fact that there's the likes of Lillian Duplessis with 100 caps, Aaron with over 50, Pumi with almost 50 caps now, that you don't have more to your name? Because I know there's a lot of fans in South Africa who think you really should.
Look, obviously I wouldn't say it's frustrating. I think good on all of those girls for obviously pushing through all the years, and brilliant hockey players as well. And as you said, come through the years with them. So, yeah, they are my friends. They were my teammates, obviously. So I wouldn't say it's a frustration. I would just say I would have been on a different journey, if I could put it that way. I obviously had a few disappointments with the South African setup. So I just think it's a totally different ball game. So it's hard to compare, because at the end of the day, I don't really compare myself to others. But yes, I think I just followed a different career path. I also followed more of my obviously career as well, not only as hockey, but also on my biokinetic side of things. So yeah, I wouldn't say it's frustrating, but it's more about where I could have been caps wise. But yeah, I'm happy with where I am at now. And as I said, obviously I had a few disappointments in the South African setup. So yeah, I just think it's a different ball game for everybody.
Yeah, look, I mean, we understand that over the course of these podcasts, we've chatted to a lot of people who have been upset by the system, who have been robbed of opportunities. And the resounding response from most people is, you don't dwell on that, though. You play the cards that come your way, and you make the most of it. And you have, because you have a really cool hockey journey. I mean, take us through your journey from... you know, playing here in South Africa, university hockey, to playing over at Canterbury in the UK, at Holcombe you played at, and of course in Australia. So just for the benefit of our listeners, take us through a little bit of that incredible journey that you've been on with hockey.
Yeah, sure. So as you've obviously stated there, it obviously shapes us into who we are today, not only as hockey players, but also as individuals. So through my sporting career, I obviously built up a lot of resilience too. So I obviously learned how to deal with those disappointments and obviously work harder. I'm a very hard worker and obviously just learn from a lot of mistakes. So that's on that side of things. But on the flip side of that, my whole hockey career, I've actually had an incredible journey, and I wouldn't change it for the world. I've seen the world, you know. So my journey started, obviously, when I was at Paul Gymnasium. I finished my school career and obviously had to make the big decision of where I was going to go to for university. And I had my mind set on Marty, so Stellenbosch. And then Missy Gordon actually had arrived or called my dad and obviously offered myself and Izelle Lazakhan actually a deal to go and play in Bloemfontein at Kofi's. And I said, no, I'm not going. I really was against it, but ended up going. And I'm actually so grateful I went. I built some lifelong friendships there. Those girls that were in my team are still my friends till today. I mean, they still call me via Skype and Zoom nowadays, all those things. And also, I think grants me the opportunity to have more playing time by myself as an individual, or obviously my style of play and so on. We obviously play a lot of Varsity Cup there, and we ended up doing really well towards the end of my university career. And whilst I was obviously playing at Corfsies, I was also studying and I did my biokinetics. So during my honours year, I had 4 weeks off. I still remember being in my oral exam, and I still said to the lecturer, please, can you give me a nod to let me know if I've passed or not, because I was flying to the UK the day after to go and play for Canterbury. So I had a little break there for 4 weeks. I literally went over for 4 weeks in my uni break. Jen Wilson was the coach at that stage. She said to me, yes, come, Lene. Come and experience what it's like to play in the UK. And I went over, and Obviously, I only spent 4 weeks there, and then I had my compulsory internship year in 2015, so I had to go back to South Africa. And then once I finished that, I made the decision that, you know, you're only young once, you can only play sport until you're a certain age. So I signed with Canterbury again, and I went in the beginning of 2016. And I had a great season there. We played in the Premiership final there alongside Durkee, actually. So, yeah, I loved my years in the UK, very different style of play to South Africa. And then from there, I got offered a deal to go over to Australia. And, you know, at that stage, I thought, oh, I've played a season, I should probably go back home. And then I decided to come over to Perth because I'd never been to Australia, and I thought it's a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. And I came over, but unfortunately, I was only here for 2 weeks and snapped my Achilles. So that was obviously forced me to go back home. So that's how I've ended up in Australia. I came back the year after my rehab, so it took me a whole year to rehab through that, obviously. And, yeah, that's where I am at now.
It's an amazing story. Sorry, Todd. I'm always amazed because often we ask this question, and often the guests, they say, yeah, you know, I was born, enjoyed hockey, played a bit, got selected, and then that's where I ended up. Yeah. Thank you very much for that very detailed description. It's actually amazing. Born in the UK, schooled in Paarl, studied in Bloemfontein, and played in England, back to England, and then ending up in Oz. So, and it's, jeez, you've lived some life in your fairly short life already.
I have indeed. Sorry for my detail.
No, the detail's the best part.
But I also think on top of that, I always say it's even in some of my cover letters, that I send off with my CV and stuff, is my hockey has actually taken me all over the world, and I've obviously seen the world through it, and I'm really grateful for it. And at the moment, my hockey is actually the reason I also got my permanent residency in another country. So very grateful for my hockey and the experience that I obviously got to experience. And as on top of that, also very thankful for my parents for offering me those opportunities, you know, and they could have said to me, no, you have to stay in South Africa. So, yep, very happy.
So, I mean, Lynnae, please don't ever apologize for the detail. I think it's absolutely fantastic, you know. And again, for the youngsters listening, they can hear what the journey is really like, not just, okay, I had talent and boom, I'm in Australia and a permanent resident. But, you know, obviously you had the Achilles snap. It's a horrific injury. And as you say, you were traveling the world because of hockey. You know, significant injuries can really derail somebody, both obviously physically, but also mentally. How did you overcome the challenge of that? And, I mean, how difficult was it for you? Because so many people, unfortunately, face that, and that's where their path ends.
Yeah, 100%. That is a very good question, because I think a lot of people do struggle with that, and I've had my fair share of injuries. I've actually broken both my collarbones. I've had my Achilles snapped, and I've actually got about 4 plates in my face from hockey, so very dangerous sport, first of all. But it's obviously taught me how to deal with it. The Achilles especially, I found really hard, because I had my operation. I fully snapped it. I had a 4-centimeter tear in my Achilles. So I had to have the operation, flew back to South Africa, had it done in Paarl. But I was immobilized for about 8 weeks. I was on crutches. And for someone that loves running and loves exercising, it was daunting. It was awful. And my parents were really good to me. Obviously, there were times where you thought, oh, am I ever going to be able to run again? That's all that went through my mind. And my mom, I'll still remember till this day, my mom said to me, when she saw me running the first time, she just had tears in her eyes, because she thought, I never thought you were going to run again, just because the amount of rehab that I obviously had to put into that, I actually remember doing my own rehab at times because obviously that's what I studied. But it's really hard. But at the end of the day, it's just setting little goals for yourself and obviously working towards those goals. I always explain even to my own patients that I work with, if you do all the little things right, the harder things will get easier and easier. So don't skip the little things as hard as it is. And obviously it builds that resilience too. So I came back stronger afterwards actually. I actually feel like I'm faster now than what I was then because I obviously worked on all of that and I focused on all those little things. So as disappointing as it is, and obviously it hits, you would know, obviously it hits at certain times of your career that you really don't need it. But at the end of the day, just if I can give a little bit of advice is just think of all the positives in life. And I know it's really hard when you're in that situation, but you just need to keep powering through and pushing through it because at the end of the day, you will end up on the other side. So yeah, that's basically, I just think it builds a lot of resilience and it makes you work harder. And yeah, that's from my side with the injury side of things.
And I can imagine, Lene, coming from a big sporting family, that would have been a massive motivator, seeing something like your brother achieving on the international cricketing front. You'd like to emulate something like that. And it leads me to my next question. We've often had guests which come from sporting backgrounds, and that's hardly surprising. But were they ones to, was your dad one to push you when you were young in terms of achieving on the sporting field, or did he just let you do your own thing and come what may?
That is a very good question. But yes, my dad, when we were younger, he did push us quite a lot, but not like to the extreme. He obviously pushed us until the point where we realized what it took to work hard as an individual and that it obviously came from inside you, because as parents, they can obviously push you to a certain extent, but if you haven't got that willpower and that fight within, it's pretty hard to obviously succeed. So I think to rephrase that, I wouldn't say my dad pushed us as much. I think he encouraged us and helped us quite a lot. I remember days when my dad would stand bowling to my brother nonstop, obviously my other brother too. He always was on the turf with me, throwing hockey balls to me, although he knew nothing about hockey. It still annoys me till this day because he tries to tell me what to do, but he doesn't know much about it. But he was always there and obviously always pushed us, well, not pushed us, but obviously encouraged us quite a lot. A good little example of this is he built a little backyard pitch for us to play backyard cricket on. So, yeah, we bowled to one another out the back. I probably fetched the ball more than anything. But, yes, I think that is from my dad's perspective. He loved the sport. So he had that passion for it and he obviously wanted us to succeed. But at the end of the day, it came from within. Whereas my mom, for example, was always just the supportive one. She would always encourage us from a distance, if I can put it that way. So she would be at the field with us, but she wouldn't physically be throwing the balls, and my dad really, really got into it.
It's an interesting study, I could imagine, in terms of how to go about raising your kids or how to go about raising a sporting superstar. Because the best sporting biography I've read, without a shadow of a doubt, was Andre Agassi's book called Open. And in it, he speaks about how his dad pushed him as a tennis player from when he was very, very young. And he hated it. He absolutely hated the sport. And, you know, he speaks about how his dad, when they're moving houses or when they'd buy a house when he was very young over in Las Vegas, the dad would literally go to the house. He wouldn't even look inside. He'd just run out to the back and measure out the garden to make sure that they could fit a tennis court in there. If they couldn't, he'd just walk away, next house, next house, next house, until he could physically put in a tennis court. And once he did, all he did was send down that ball machine to Andre when he was 2 or 3 years old and send about 1,000 balls a day. And he hated it, yet, of course, we see the fruits of his dad's hard work come out at the end. Yet there's been other cases where we've had sporting stars where they said exactly what you have, where it's been, no, my parents didn't push me whatsoever, but they did encourage me, and they were always there, and I think this is the most important part, as support. So whatever I needed, they managed to provide, if they could, obviously within their means, but they were always there for support, not so much in terms of intimidation.
Exactly, and I can add two little stories from my childhood that I remember quite clearly, is always when one of my brothers were out on the cricket field, you just hear my dad's tires go and he'd shoot off from the field. And my tennis years, because I used to play tennis quite competitively too, every time I thought my dad was at the court, I would hear like a loud clap from the back, and I think, oh, I've hit in the net again, my father's here. So from that side, definitely supportive, and he obviously just wanted us to succeed. So those times that we'd play a terrible shot and stuff, he would obviously just expect a little bit better from us.
And growing up, no doubt, I mean, coming from Paul Jim, that must have also played a massive role. I've got a lot of friends who come from there. I've got a few friends whose kids go there now. And what a magnificent school.
Absolutely incredible. I was actually only there for a year and a half of my school career. But at that stage, that was the first AstroTurf that was built in Nepal. And I'm very thankful for the school. I mean, they also granted me a lot of opportunities. I think part of the reason why I got my bursary at Kofi's was through the school. So, yes, forever grateful for them. And even when I go home now, I just call Wimuel, who is the Astro manager there, and I go, oh, can I come and hit some balls? And they still let me on the turf every day. They still invite me to have some chats to the youngsters. So still pretty much fully involved in the school when I do go home. And I try and give back as much as I can, because obviously they've given quite a bit to me as well.
Elena, you are very popularly known in the sense that it's on your social media feeds, it's on everything, but you are number 12. Is there any importance behind the number, or was it just given to you?
Well, actually, that number, I love number 12. That's just my favorite number. But my national number is actually number 15. So I took Kitty Kutia's number. Actually, I had six footsteps to fulfill. But, at the moment at Hale, here in Australia, I'm number 14. But I'm number 14 only because I can't get number 12, because my dearest player coach, Madonna Blythe, is the famous number 12. So I don't think I'd ever get that number until she retires. So no reason behind it. I just really love the number 12, but I don't often get to play with it.
I mean, it's obviously a great number 12. For me, it's just simply a dyslexic number, though, because my favorite number in the world is 21. So I need the reverse.
No, but... Yeah, I hate odd numbers. I need even numbers.
yeah, of course. I just feel like 21's not. I know it is an odd number. It just doesn't feel like an odd number because it just looks so right. But that's an accountant talking now. So we're just going to move on from that before I lose that job.
Yep.
Lena, you obviously also had experience of playing both in the South African Premier Hockey League for the Wine and Wings, and in Hockey 1 for the Perth Thundersticks. I mean, what was the experience like between the two? Because in essence, the two are fairly similar in terms of what they are to Hockey Australia and South African hockey.
Yes, so similar in a way, but not as much, because obviously PHL is more of a draft system, which is actually a tournament coming up in about a week and a half time. We've got the draft happening on Sunday, so I'd be interested to see how this tournament goes in 2 weeks' time. With regards to Hockey 1, that is obviously like the IPT of South Africa, I would say, because you're still playing in a form of state, so ours would obviously be provinces in South Africa, So they choose the 14, so they only take 14 players. So they choose your best 14 per state, which is obviously included of all the national players as well. And the experience was incredible. We played all over Australia. So we'd play weekends. So like last year you would, for example, if we playing against Tasmania, you'd fly on the Friday, play on the Saturday, fly back on the Saturday. So you only play one game at a time. So similar in a way, but totally different style of play here. They are big on counterattacks and going forward and breaking lines. And I think that's helped my hockey quite a lot. So I just think the level is a little bit higher here with obviously having all the strongest players all over the country playing against one another, which is probably similar to PHL. But I just think, the experience from my side, it's a little bit stronger on this side.
And overall, the quality of the league, I mean, obviously you have a big cup semi-final coming up this weekend. There's a lot of structure there. But overall, how would you compare the quality of your club hockey in Australia with the quality of the club hockey in...
Levels higher than South Africa. I think the reason for that is here in Australia, we've got a bit of we get an Australian pick. So each team in Perth has at least two or three of the Hockey Roos, which is the Australian national players per team. So depending on where you end in the league, that depends on how many Australian players you get. So we at my hockey club, Hale Hockey Club, we've got the likes of Mariah Williams, Emily Chalker, which was Emily Smith, who's the current captain. And then we used to have Sophie Taylor, but she's just been put back into the draft. So from that perspective, they try and even out the teams quite a lot. And obviously there's some quality premier players / state players playing in each team. So the league is extremely close here. So I think that's what I would say is the difference in South Africa, where you'd have one or two teams that are really strong and then the others really struggle to compete. So I'm not sure if they can maybe try and implement a rule where you only allowed four national players per team or something like that, just to even it out a bit, because I mean, when our national players play here in Australia, it makes a huge difference to our team. So we've got a big game coming up this weekend. With Mariah Williams is injured at the moment, which makes a big difference to our team. But just having that extra strength in the team really makes a difference. So I think that's just the big difference, is how it's evenly split quite a bit.
South Africa never really has embraced that concept of trying to share the talent amongst teams, no matter the sport. And we see it all over the world. I think the States started it with salary caps, etc. And you get the NFL draft going straight from, well, any draft really, going straight from college into professional sport. The team that finished last the previous year gets first pick. So to make sure that it is a competitive league. And, I mean, we've seen it so often in South Africa, where, and no matter the sport, where it's completely lopsided. You get normally the usual suspects topping the log, and then the usual suspects anchoring the table, and it's not a difference of like 5 or 6 log points, it's a difference of 30 or 40 log points. Yeah, it's a difference between 10 wins and one
exactly.
win. And I mean, we speak about salary caps in England now. I mean, Saracens were heavily fined. They're going to be relegated because they went and flaunted the laws regarding salary caps. And it surely would yep. be a brilliant case study in terms of improving South African sport across the board to do that, to try and even out the talent, because at the moment it's not working, and it shows in the crowds, it shows in the results. And you could say, oh, but the Springboks went and won the World Cup. And I think that's an exception to the rule, because elsewhere, teams certainly are struggling.
I totally agree with that. Look, I obviously follow a lot of the girls on social media back home, and it looks like there's a lot of work being put in from the national setup, which is really good to see. from like obviously from here and stuff. But I totally agree with you on that one, where here in Perth, if you are picked into the national setup, you have to relocate to Perth. So our league here is extremely strong because obviously all those players, say now if they were from Sydney or the Gold Coast, they all have to move over to Perth. So it strengthens the league a lot and it just makes a big difference, and it really helps youngsters grow in their game as well, because they're learning so much from obviously these icons in their team. So in my team, for example, I've got the famous Madonna Blythe that plays for us, and I've learned so much from her. She's incredible, and it's just having a little bit more depth to a team to learn from, I think will make a huge difference in South Africa as well.
Yeah, there's no case. I mean, there's no argument that it wouldn't. I completely agree. And
yeah. We
can really, really hope for the best that we do hopefully go that way eventually. I know that Francois Pienaar, with his links to the Varsity Cup, they've been trying to encourage that. Of course, the Varsity Cup use a promotion relegation system. And we don't see it a lot in professional sports in South Africa. Of course, the DStv Premier League, now they do that. But, I would really love to see more of the talent spread across South Africa, given that it is such a big country. There are so many different teams that are available, again, across every single sport. And, for an example, I come from the Eastern Cape, and Eastern Cape rugby is everything, everything. And now, it was 2 weeks ago where the Kings, claimed insolvency, and they've literally just disappeared. They've just dissolved into nothing. You've got a bunch of rugby players down in PE who, there's a story I read yesterday, Cameron Wright, who's a scrum half. He had to sell half his home to pay off incurring debts. And because they just don't have the money yet. I mean, we're talking about a province in South Africa where it's rugby, daylight, and then other sport. Yet they can't put together a rugby team. And yet you've got teams where... And I don't want to mention names, but you've got teams where sitting on the bench and not even able to make the bench. You've got Springboks, who a year ago won the Rugby World Cup. So you've got all the talent just confined into little areas, and then you've got these massive spaces where they've just got not a single player.
Oh, I totally agree with that. And as I said, I really hope that there could be some implementation of obviously building this, because... yes, as I can imagine a lot of people playing abroad would probably say the same thing, where we want South African hockey to improve, and we want everything to be better, especially for the youngsters coming through, because it's important for them. I mean, hockey is one of the highest paid sports in South Africa, and it is very important. And I think on the flip side of that, it's losing a lot of players, but not only players, but also coaches. So I think on the coaching side of things too, South Africa has lost quite a few quality coaches on that side as well, because it's frustration, I think, that they just want some change and some improvement. So I'm really hoping everything that's going on now, there's at least a little bit of an improvement by the looks of it, but really encourage everyone to obviously push as hard as they can to make a change, because I've experienced it in a different country and it works. And I understand we don't have the funding in South Africa, but it is very important to obviously build the younger generation, because we don't want a repeat of the 2016 Olympics, because that's, at the end of the day, who are the role models to the hockey players in South Africa?
Yeah, well, then you could also claim that maybe it's symbiotic in terms of the funding and the system, because maybe if there was a better system in place, more funding would come in because people could see that it works. But I think that's a discussion for another day. Just on a personal note, I mean, we spoke about the semi-finals this weekend. You say it does work. I mean, it surely does in terms of your talent. I mean, you must be extremely excited with what the future holds, particularly the near future of the next coming days.
Yes, very excited. So we played this past weekend. We always play... knockout elimination. So if you're in fourth, third and fourth play against one another and the loser's out, but then the winner plays the loser of one and two. So it doesn't work like a normal semi-final. So we won last weekend against the team that actually beat us in the grand final last year. So that was exciting to get through the first round. And then this weekend we've obviously got another go. So very exciting. I love the team I'm playing in at the moment. We play a very team-oriented game, give and go side bite. So, yes, we're playing on Saturday at 2:15. If you'd like to watch, you can tune in. It's live stream. So, yeah, very excited to take the field with my team, and hopefully we can get back into the grand final, which is the weekend after.
And how can they watch? You say the live stream? Whereabouts?
Yes, so there's a YouTube link, usually on Hockey Western Australia's Facebook page, but I could share that with you if you want that.
No, we definitely will. This, unfortunately, just thinking, actually, this will air afterwards, unfortunately, but we'll promote it. We'll promote it regardless on our social media channels for everyone to check it out.
Well, hopefully we make the grand final and you can promote it that weekend.
Let's just promote it both weekends.
Yeah.
I mean,
perfect.
Lynnae, obviously you've also got some, like you said, some great coaches that you've played under in your career. Is there a coach that stands out as like the one coach that's made the biggest impact on you?
To be honest, I wouldn't say one specific coach. I have had quite a few good experiences with some coaches. One that stands out to me is Jacques. He was my coach at Cofties. I think he always built my confidence quite a lot and shaped me into the player I am. A second mention I would give is actually to Lindsay Rice, because I was actually talking to her the other day, and I'll never forget this. When we were prepping for the Junior World Cup, I was doing some sprints and with the rest of the team, and I turned probably 1 centimeter before the line, and she made us redo it all. So that sticks with me till this day. I don't think I've ever turned before a line again. We were having a good giggle about that. So she had a big influence on my career, although I always thought, she always shouted at me and stuff, but I always thought she just had something against me. But there was one day, that in particular, where she said to me, when I stop shouting at you and I stop encouraging you, that's when I know I've given up on you. But the fact that I'm obviously pushing you means that I know I can get more out of you. So that sticks with me quite a lot. But most recently, the two coaches that really stand out is Madonna Blythe and Emily Halliday, which are my current coaches. I have learned so much from them. My game has developed so much since I've been in Australia. So a big thank you to them as well with all they've done and the freedom they let me play with.
No, that's fantastic stuff. I mean, I'll never forget, as pitiful as was and as average a hockey player as I was much better at coaching and umpiring. I'll never forget I had a coach named Grant Clough when I was in grade 9, who actually just transformed my love of the game completely just by the way he coached. So, I mean, we know that a coach can make such a massive impact, and so many people listening to this are coaches, so keep it up. You know, Lynnae, the other thing I wanted to ask you was just stepping away from hockey a little bit. So forgetting hockey now, you've traveled quite a lot. You talk about yourself as a world traveler, and that's something that both Derek and I are very fond of. Obviously, not in the age of Corona, but before that, where is your favorite place you've traveled to, not for hockey purposes, just your favorite place? And then where is your bucket list? There's the one place you really want to travel to next. And again, we can keep this one away from hockey purposes, just general.
Yes, perfect. So my favorite place I've actually traveled to is, it was in Italy. It's called, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this correctly, it's called Cinque Terre, which means obviously the five coastal towns. So one of my American friends and I, we traveled along there for 5 days, and it was absolutely incredible. The scenery, it was just beautiful, and that was just awesome. Like, we hiked up and down these mountains, which were obviously beautiful, a lot of steps, so it was really nice. And my bucket list, this is a good question. I think I would love to go and see the Northern Lights, but yeah, I haven't put much thought into that. I guess I will take that on when I get there.
Ooh, that sounds good. I know that my girlfriend and I also have a massive bucket list destination, which includes the Northern Lights. So, oh, man, you really ticked the box there. Italy, really, really wonderful place. I completely agree. But without a doubt, the Northern Lights would definitely take center stage for me.
You know, Derek, there's one place I went in my life that was, you know, you often see places in pictures or in movies, and then when you go there, you're kind of like, oh, is that it? And it's not the most special place in the world, but exactly what I expected is what I saw was actually Venice in Italy. Mm. I mean, it was everything I imagined was that. Exactly.
So I didn't actually go to Venice. I did Florence and Lucca and Pisa and Cinque Terre. So I'll have to go back sometime.
Yeah, I've only done Rome, and what I loved, and I went to Rome on the back of Berlin, and I loved the history of the two cities. I mean, I could just, I'd walk it for days just looking at the different statues, the buildings. I mean, even the street signs, you know. I mean, I'd look at the street signs, and they'd been cobbled together from ancient stone, etc. And I mean, this street sign alone is older than South Africa. Yeah, and that always amazed me, the history of certain places in Europe. But Italy, definitely right up there. But yeah, without a doubt, the Northern Lights would be on my bucket list.
Definitely.
Along with
yours. I
agree. Okay, Lene, how it's going to work now, we move over to the tail end of the interview. And it is the one question quiz. I don't know if you've heard the podcast before. You must lie and say yes if you haven't. But we always sell off.
I have, actually.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, so you know exactly how this works. We end things off with a one-question quiz that's usually pretty tough. And I think I lost.
Can I get a multiple-choice question?
of course not.
I'm just kidding.
it's actually pretty easy. So here we go. Okay, so now
what would you say on all of them, Derek?
Fair enough. Okay, so let me see. Yep. Yeah, you're going to say?
No, nothing.
Okay, let me get a nice little song here. This is going to be from Six and Out. This was a band that Brett Lee was in. Here we go. This is our little musical interlude that we like adding just to separate the one question quiz from everything else. Okay, and it's very pertinent to you because you did study in Bloemfontein. So Bloemfontein was the scene of our penultimate ODI that South Africa have played, because, of course, we've only played, we played six ODIs in 2020, and then coronavirus hit, so we haven't played anything more. So Bloemfontein was the penultimate ODI that we did play. We played against Australia, and in it, a century was scored by a player for South Africa, and it also happens to be the last century a South African has scored in ODI cricket. Do you have any idea who that was?
You shouldn't be asking me cricket questions. was it recent?
It was at the beginning of the year.
And was it also someone that had my surname?
So you have been following. Well done.
Well, I haven't been following, but sometimes I think I was at home at that time in South Africa. So I think I'm not sure. They aren't related to me, just first of all. And secondly, I think was it Yanaman?
Well done. Congratulations. Very, very well done. Because that was very, very tricky. Because like you, they also come from a massive sporting family, and there's actually three brothers that play cricket professionally. So, yeah, you had to be very specific, and you hit the nail on the head. Congratulations. Yanaman Milan, it was. And that means that we've had our first success in the One Question Quiz for quite some time, Ty.
Yeah, look, I think Lene has just taught all future joiners what to do. Go and listen to a few, and you actually pick up Derek's line of questioning, and then it is really an easy question.
It's always something related with my surname or something in history, isn't it?
Yeah, that we don't cover a lot of bases, but the bases that we do cover have proven to be quite tough. So, but not tough enough for you. Congratulations, Lynnae. What's the time over there?
Thank you so much. It is almost 5 p.m., so I've got hockey in about 30 minutes.
Oh, brilliant. So we wrapped it up just in time. And how far are you away from training? I always love it in Oz. Well, I think a lot of places, and that everything is just a hop, skip, and a jump in terms of public transport, etc. Do you need to vehicle a bit to get there, or is it around the corner?
I actually sometimes ride my bike there because I'm literally 2 minutes away from the hockey club. So, yes, very close.
Are you close to the Swan River?
No, I'm closer to the coast, but I would say in between. So it's pretty easy for me to jump on the freeway, which is obviously right at the Swan River, but it's also about 5 minute drive from the beach as well.
Oh, well, it really is a lovely part of the world. We won't keep you waiting. Yeah, head off to hockey. And Lynnae, it's been a pleasure chatting to you, and we wish you the best of luck for this weekend. When listeners hear this, so it'll be the past weekend. So, yeah, we wished you the best of luck for what just took place in the past. But, yeah, it's been so, so good chatting to you. And, yeah, best of luck for the future. And also to your sporting family, the brothers. We hope to see David continue to perform in the T20 arena and hopefully maybe make a return to the Test arena too.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me. I love you guys' work. It's awesome to hear all the podcasts, and yeah, just keep it up. Hopefully a lot of people are listening and there will be some changes made. But thank you so much for having me. It is an absolute honor. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, Anna. Well done for this weekend as your team won the semi-final. And good luck for the grand final next weekend when everybody's listening. We look forward to live streaming it and sharing it all over the social media channels.
Awesome. Thanks so much, guys.
Thanks, Lynnae. Ciao.
All right. Bye-bye. Bye.
You know, Derek, I've said it before when we had Shelly Russell, Shelly Jones now, about her and Brent. Said it before when we had Celia, about her and Brett Evans. But how amazing it is for a family to produce not just one international sportsman, but two and a third incredibly talented sportsman. I mean, it must just be fantastic growing up in a family like that and to be able to back each other. And of course, their story is so cool because of they are representatives of the world, not just the country.
Yeah, and we mentioned the same thing in the previous discussions. And I'm an only child, so I can't really relate, but of course, I've done it with friends, and we've achieved things on the cricket field or the golf course or whatever. Like, I got that ball in 5 shots, you did it in 6, I win this one. And imagine those discussions whereby I've played for my country 28 times, you've only done it 24. You know, it's a completely different level. Things like that, to chat on sporting achievements on an international stage, just must be something else. And to do it with your own family, I mean, that must take the cake.
Yeah, I mean, with my family, it's like, who paid for lunch this week?
Oh, man. Ty, thanks so much, man. As always, well done. What a superb guest. Really, really enjoyed her. And I look forward to seeing her continued success on the hockey front and even more so over in Australia. But yeah, congratulations to you for grabbing her, and best of luck to Lynnae for the future.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Have a great one, everybody. See you next week at the Barbie.
Ciao.